Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. I'm so glad you guys are tuning into this episode. Whatever it is that you're dealing with today specifically or going through at the moment, I just hope that your takeaway from this episode is going to give you what you need. Is it hope, inspiration, validation, some tips on how to treat this or detox more affordable? Whatever it is that you need today, I hope that that's what you get from this episode. And if you want to continue to help me share my voice and our voice in the community, please go into the about of this podcast, scroll to the bottom, click on that donation link. Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. And I'm excited to have my guest today. Of course, she's going to share a little bit about her personal Lyme journey. And what's interesting about my guest today is a lot of times once we go through this Lyme journey, it kind of changes our mission and passion in life. And oftentimes people will then get into the medical field or into the holistic world. And what is interesting about my guest today is that she was a naturopath before she even knew she had Lyme disease. So this was already kind of her wheelhouse. And so we're going to talk about what Anna Powers does. She works out of Longevity Health Center in Georgia. She specializes in brain mapping and neurofeedback and highly sensitive patients, which I really want to touch on that because I've noticed over the last couple of years how many more and more people are becoming just super sensitive to any type of treatments. And then they feel completely hopeless because if I can't take one drop of a tincture without feeling like I'm going to die, how can I ever treat this? So I'm anxious to dive into that piece, but of course into all of this. So I'm excited to have you, Anna. Thank you so much for joining me. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. And thank you for that beautiful introduction.
Awesome. So let's go ahead. There's so much, right? And I want to get it all crammed in. So let's go ahead and kind of start with your personal Lyme journey.
Okay. Well, I'll be brief, but to really explain that, I need to give a little bit more background beforehand.
Do it however you want to do it. It's your show.
Yeah. So I was a sickly kid. I had rheumatic fever when I was 4. And then I took antibiotics every day for 15 years. And so I had joint pain, I had headaches, and I had all kinds of symptoms, really my entire childhood till my mid 20s. And that's just how I grew up, stomach aches and just, you name it, all kinds of weird symptoms. And so that was how I got into being a naturopath, is I went to a naturopath who helped me dramatically. Like, I felt so much better. So working with her, she inspired me in essence to move into the natural health field and eventually become a provider, a naturopath. And then I was working a lot and taking care of a loved one who had had multiple surgeries and wasn't able to walk or drive for, ultimately 12 months, different, like 4 months at a time. But, you know, that means they can't drive themselves anywhere and they can't feed themselves and all kinds of things. And so I had a lot on my plate. And then I was working at a clinic prior to where I am now at Longevity, at a functional medicine clinic. And I guess she was kind of watching me shift. She was seeing changes in me. And I was talking about, you know, the joint pain that I explained away of, oh, I must have accidentally eaten gluten, and the brain fog, oh, I'm perimenopausal, or just the fatigue, oh, I'm working too hard, it must be adrenal stress. Like, every single thing I just kept like just explaining away. And when she asked, I initially said no. And then a few months later, I was like, yeah, I think we should, because I'd remembered I'd gotten bitten by a spider and it gave me a bullseye rash. But at the time, I did not know that you could potentially get Lyme from spiders. And so I just thought it got infected, but I addressed it all naturally, but only for a little while, not week, you know, months. Like, I would
and
do
just a, an actual bite versus addressing the Lyme disease. Yes. And it's interesting how, you know, we all know that we get very dismissed by many doctors out mm-hmm. in the community, but here you are dismissing yourself, right? Yes. Isn't, I mean, it, how do we explain it, right? Like we don't think that something is wrong with us, and we just think all the normal things of life, you know, wreak this havoc on our bodies. So, well.
Yes. I really just thought it was stress, and I of course didn't remember I took Bite either. And just all the things I've learned a lot more. That was in 2014. So I've learned a lot, or 2015, around there. So I've learned a lot since then, of course.
So do you think all of these issues that you had growing up, do you think maybe you had Lyme then?
I'm suspicious of it. I will never know. It seems
how
early.
Do we know, right?
So that would be 74. I think it's possible, right? I lived on an island. I mean, the inhabited island. I could paint a lot of different pictures. I grew up in Savannah, and I lived on Isle of Hope, and there's lots of bugs and nature and mosquitoes and, you know, spiders and all kinds of things. And so who knows? The symptoms are certainly similar. I can say that. Even the heart stuff, like just all kinds of things. So once I was diagnosed with Lyme, I opted to do a natural approach, and obviously, yes, and I mean, not obviously, but I chose to try herbs and homeopathy first. And, you know, I was very lucky. I responded really well to homeopathy, and within 6 weeks, I was beginning to feel better. And by 6 months, I was probably 80-90% better. So it's not the typical. The mine was before, I mean, it took a lot to keep me upright, like even before the diagnosis. Like I just thought it was because of my childhood, right? I just thought, oh, it's because of, you know, all the antibiotics, and I just always needed adrenal support, and just, you know, I was taking care of myself, and I felt much better in my 30s and 40s than I did in my teens and 20s. So it just never occurred to me that I would have it, but I feel really fortunate. You know, here I have someone asking me to take the test, and most of the time, most of the people I know have to beg their providers to do it. So I realized the irony of it. And I realized my journey was so much simpler than so many. And I feel fortunate for that, but it also made me realize, like, wow, there's a lot of people that have this. And there's a lot of the people that come to see me now have already been through all the normal treatments, and they feel great on the antibiotics. And when they get off the antibiotics, they feel horrible. And so the only solution is to get back on them. And after years of doing that, they want to try something different, and their doctors don't have anything else to give them.
Yeah, no, you kind of nailed that. I think that, and you being a naturopath, I'm glad that was the path you chose to go first, right? Because
yes.
I mean, we don't have a, you know, a magic ball to know how to treat, but just being within this community for as long as I have been, and my own personal journey, there's always a time and place for antibiotics, I believe that, but I also believe that most of us have chronic Lyme, because we can't get a proper diagnosis in time. And I truly just don't believe antibiotics should be our first option when we have chronic Lyme. Maybe in conjunction with herbals, possibly, but I think we should think outside the box first. And I think that's where a lot of people struggle with, like you just mentioned, you know, people have gone years on antibiotics and then finally they come to you, because there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing wrong with the way we're thinking. That's how we were raised, most of us, right? We get sick, we go to the doctor, we take the pill, we get better. And so when we kind of look outside the box or hear other people talk about it, it's like, what is that? That sounds crazy. Like, really, you think that's going to help me? You know, but there's so many of us walking around that is how we healed. And I think it's so much gentler on our body. And people think that these plants and all these medicines that we talk about are all new, right? Like, no, this is the original, right? Like this goes back to our ancestors. Yes. And so, yeah, it's hard, but I get, you know, how they're stuck into traditional doctors and treatments, because that's what we know. And the other side of it is sometimes that's covered by insurance, whereas we know the other optional care is not. And that does definitely put a financial burden on our already burdened lives, right? So,
yes.
Yeah. So what did your, can you give us, just give us kind of a brief rundown of maybe some of your game changers that were part of your journey, like specific tinctures, or did you do just different modalities that you saw the needle move?
Yeah, I addressed it at multiple levels, and I did homeopathy, it's micro doses of the bacteria to cause our immune system to address it in a different way. Like a lot of times those spirochetes spiral and they're not in the blood anymore. And our body gets used to it, kind of like it doesn't respond, you know, it's in biofilms. It doesn't respond to traditional approaches after a while. So I did the homeopathy to address that bit. And I did a lot of organ support and drainage. I feel like one of the reasons why we get so sick when we start, you know, obviously when we're killing these really stealth bacteria, that's going to make us feel bad, but our whole body has to detox that, right? Like there's this whole process of eliminating that. We've just killed all these bacteria. How are we going to get it out of our body? And it has to go through our organs of elimination, our lymph, our spleen, our liver, kidneys, all of them can be impacted. And I made sure to have a lot of drainage on board because I already knew I was a highly sensitive person. So anytime I start adding a bunch of stuff, I have to go really slow. And I got the drainage pathways opened, which is what I do for any person when I see them. And then the herbs I used the remedies I used were silver, or ginseng 23. I had to start at a drop.
Love that you said that, because that's my favorite thing.
it changed my life.
Yeah. But
1/4 teaspoon, I herxed horribly. Like it says to take a teaspoon 3 times a day, and 1/4 teaspoon. And I was shaking violently. Like I couldn't really, I couldn't walk straight. I was just so, I detoxed so bad. Wow. And I was like, all right. So I dropped down to a drop. And slowly worked my way up. If I added a drop and I didn't feel right, then I drop it back down and do that dose for a little bit longer. But eventually got up to only 1/2 teaspoon is the farthest I made it.
Wow.
That I did get well. But yeah. I also did monolaurin with it. And then I would intersperse other herbs like cat's claw. And these are the things that I knew of at the time, right? Of course, I know about a lot more herbs now, but those were the antiviral or antibacterial herbs. And I did, for joints, I did white willow bark and the adrenal support, just all the kind of symptom management as I was getting to the root of it. And I had the positive Western blot for Borrelia. And then one of the things I do here is bioenergetic assessment, and that testing, Babesia was energetically isolated and Bartonella was energetically isolated, which I was diagnosed in my 20s from a cat scratch with Bartonella. So that certainly made sense. And so I did just a ton of antibacterial herbs for it. Probably 9-10 months every day, just piled it on. If I thought of a new one, I'm trying to remember the other things I did. I think Lapacho was one of them. And
what was it? I hadn't heard that before.
Lapacho, it's or Paul Darko. I think it's from South America, and Echinacea, just all of it. just rotated out a little bit, but the silver I stayed on consistently. And I think that was, I know it sounds kind of boring, but it worked.
No, not boring at all. In fact, I had no idea you were going to even mention silver, because honestly, that is one of my favorite things and I talk about it all the time.
Yes.
And that was the brand that I took as well. Yeah. My doctor introduced me to the Argentan Silver. And from since then, I actually brew my own silver at home because I'm well, but I use that stuff for everything. It is truly amazing.
It is.
Yes, sure. Amazing. But it's interesting too that you were that sensitive to even just silver. Because I know, obviously, I didn't do 9 teaspoons a day the first day, right? But it wasn't long. You know, I did a teaspoon. A couple of days later, I added another teaspoon and I did 9 teaspoons for years and years and years. And I don't think I ever felt any type of a herx from it. However, I'm pretty sure I was just in a herx for years. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I don't know if I could have felt any worse. Yeah. But I love that you also mentioned, you know, one of the things that you do is support your organs and detoxing, because if our detox pathways are closed or not working or struggling, I truly almost think that detoxing can be more important than actually killing. And people don't get that. I understand it oftentimes takes us a long time to get a diagnosis. Okay, fine. I have Lyme. I'm just going to kill it, kill it, kill it. Let me tell you, that's not the way to do it, right? Like, we can overkill so quickly. And if we're not detoxing properly, or our bodies are not detoxing, you know, and a lot of us have the MTHFR mutation that causes us to not detox properly, you know, just so many things, play into that, but it's a huge piece to do it. And I would say that even more so with people that are extra sensitive. So overall, your journey, about how long did you treat until you reached remission or really got your life back?
I'd say about a year.
Okay.
And you know, what you just brought up about the detox pathways, we could call that the terrain in a sense, right? And include the gut with that. And there's just been this huge debate for at least hundreds of years, whether it's the germ or the terrain. And what we're talking about is the terrain. Like, why did the bacteria take me down?
Yes. Right? Yeah.
And I believe stress, almost everyone that's come in with chronic Lyme will say, I was fine until. I was fine until the divorce. I was fine until taking care of an aging parent or a loved one or a stressful time at work or medical school.
Or a car accident.
Yes.
Physical, emotional trauma. I 1,000,000% agree with that, because I think so many people are walking around infected with Lyme, but their terrain as well, right? Their foundation. Yeah, sure. I call it my foundation. My foundation is good and strong, and that includes all the stuff you mentioned earlier, right? Yes. And it was perfect, because I got a bullseye rash and I didn't get sick for 4 years. And it was when I was stressing my body, I was overworking, I was doing a lot of things, and then boom. And just like with COVID, that brought out what they all said was long haul. Turns out a lot of them have Lyme disease now, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm so glad you mentioned that, because that is huge. And that's why I feel that when we get well, if we continue to keep a strong foundation, or as you call it, a strong terrain, the pathogens have nowhere to go.
Yeah.
Right? So we can stay well. So important. Mm-hmm.
We can handle it. It can be managed. Just can't manage the stress load and that.
Right.
So I was very, very fortunate to be done in a year. I see clients who have, you know, they'll say they got diagnosed the same year I did, and they've been on this struggle for the entire time. And I think, oh my word, like, I almost cry when I think about it.
It is heartbreaking.
It breaks my heart. And I do know how lucky I've been with that, but I feel very fortunate that it only took me a year.
But do you also think that just your background of being a naturopath played a big role in, you know, how you knew how to support your body? And that right there speaks volumes in the sense that you knew how to fix that terrain probably much faster than anybody that's going through this journey, or the different doctors that don't know what they're doing, or, you know what I mean? And so I'm sure that played a big role. So
I did want to add a caveat to that. I really didn't address Lyme that much prior to it. I wasn't seeing a ton of clients come to me with it. If I did suspect it, I would have them, work with the functional doctor to have it tested, and then she would work with them. So I didn't know about silver for that. I mean, I knew about silver, of course, but it never would have entered my mind to do silver. But I had, as life would have it, I was, the day that I found out I had it, I was on my way to meet with a provider, a chiropractor, about a joint venture with brain mapping. And when I met with him, I was like, if I seem a little off, I just got a Lyme diagnosis. So that, you know, you might figure out I'm a little transparent. And I figured people need to know what you're dealing with. If I seem off or scattered or something, it was because I got this big news. And he's like, oh, well, you should go see Seneca Anderson. And he was the founder of the clinic where I work now. And so I came to see him. And when he was working with me, he did the exact same type of testing, the electrodermal screening that I do. And I was like, wait, I've been referring all these people out, and he's like just doing it. And so in my mind, Lyme was just such this big, big thing that they, of course, they would be supported with herbs and homeopathy and things, but that they needed the antibiotics. And so I was grateful that he was willing to work with me, not only willing, that's the only way he did it, but I wanted to give him credit. Like, I didn't have every single tool, but the tool that I did have was, I knew I had to get my terrain in shape before I could detox, because I'd already been down that hole. That wasn't my first rodeo of how to take myself out really fast is to detox without getting the pathways open. So that part I did on my own.
Yeah. And I wonder, can we, before we kind of move on to all the other stuff that you do at your clinic that I'm really interested in, can you touch on maybe a couple of things or ways that the listeners could, one, make sure that their detox pathways are open and working? Are there signs that they can look for? Are there things that are affordable, maybe that they can do at home that could help, you know, make sure that they're up? I know that, you know, for the lymphatic system, there's many things that you can do, but all the other things that you're talking about too, can you maybe take a few minutes and try to maybe offer some tips to the listeners out there for, in that regard?
Sure. I typically go about it by testing to see, you know, energetically assessing what organs need support. So it's a different way of looking. So it'll take me a moment to kind of put that together. But like, you know, both kidneys and liver can, if we're prone to rashes or itchiness or skin things, think liver, the gas, belching, digestive issues, liver, kidneys can be nausea. They can be, really concentrated urine, even when you're not dehydrated. The lymph is a huge one, and that would be, you know, swollen lymph nodes, puffiness, like swollen legs around. We have lymph nodes in our calves, at the top of our calves, almost behind our knees, and in our inguinal area, which is our legs meet our pelvis, and our underneath our armpits, and for women around the breast area, I guess for men too, but in neck, up in the neck. So if there's any swollen lymph nodes or swelling or puffiness there, and then what to do about it, I think, is eat clean food, eat a diverse diet. And by clean, I mean organic. So we're not putting pesticides in our body. You know, I think it's easy to Google foods that support the liver, that support the kidneys, and drink lots and lots of water, half your ideal body weight in ounces as a minimum. Some people, if they're overweight, they might not feel good drinking half their body weight in ounces of water. So it could be too much. And so just starting with when you were in your normal size body, how much, take half of that. So if they were 120 pounds, 60 ounces. And I think I use herbs, right? So when people come to see me, they've done foods and they've done everything that they can. And so I bring out bigger guns. And so using herbs and homeopathics for opening the channels is typically how I do it. And also making sure we're not constipated. That's huge.
Yes. Yeah. We talk about all the stuff, including poop, right? When we talk about Lyme.
Yes.
No, thank you, Anna, so much for sharing all of that. And I kind of put you on the spot asking you that. But I think it's really important because oftentimes we don't know. Well, first of all, oftentimes we kind of have to do this struggle on our own, right? Mm-hmm. If we can't afford a doctor or find the right doctor. And there's so many things that we don't know. We don't know what we don't know. And for most of us, this is kind of a new thing. You know, there's not really a Lyme 101 for dummy book out there, you know, there should be, but, and so a lot of times people don't know, but I know that the lymphatic system. And so that's really good and helpful, you know, if you have a swollen face and just the different things that they may be suffering from or dealing with, and it kind of relates to what maybe organ or issue that is causing that problem. So fabulous tips. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I didn't mention rebounding for lymphatics or dry brushing, but those are definitely very strong for getting lymphatic flow.
Yes. Rebounding, vibe plate, dry brushing. And the other thing I've been saying, and now that I have a naturopath on the show, right? Because I am certainly not a doctor. I'm just a patient with a really long journey. I feel that when your lymphatic system is struggling, or even just kind of as a maintenance, right? What do you think about those little handheld massagers and just massage over areas of your body? I always share that as a tip. Is that a good tip?
Yeah, I think it's good. It doesn't need as much pressure a lot of times, but I think sometimes it does. Like I'm in the process of, I hurt my back in January and I've been trying to rehab it naturally. And I'm doing Egoscue exercises, and I don't want to go off on that too much, but there are these tiny little exercises that you would not think would do that much, like toe raises. And yet the calves are, the lymphatic system doesn't have technically a pump, but if the closest things to a pump would be the calves. And just the calf raises, I'm having a bit of a detox response. I'm having to add lymphatic drainage just from that. So I would add calf raises to that, but be careful. It does more than you would think.
Interesting. I would not have guessed, you know, because a lot of us are in bed too, right? First of all, we don't have a vibe plate, don't have a rebounder, but maybe we're not physically capable of doing that. So I always, and you know, most of our bodies hurt anyway. So yeah, massage it all. But I always thought massaging with just a small little massager over a
limb
system could help. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, wonderful tips. I appreciate that. So now let's get into the brain mapping and the neurofeedback. Kind of start with, what is it? Why is it important? How does it work? Is it expensive, right? All the stuff.
Okay. So I'm writing it down. What is it? How does it work? Why do we need it? And expense. All right. So what is it? A brain map is it's measuring the electrical activity of the brain. We have brain waves occurring as like a symphony in our brain all the time. We have delta waves, which mostly relate to sleep. But we do have it during waking hours, but it's more active while we sleep. And we have theta waves, which is a daydreamy, creative type state. It's kind of like a twilight state before we're fully awake. And alpha, which is our idle state. So like a car idles when it's not going, but it's not, the brakes aren't on necessarily. When we're doing something that we've already learned how to do, like drive a car. So we have to be awake to do it, but we don't have to be so conscious of like, well, where does my foot go when I need to push the brakes? Like when we need to stop, our foot hits the brake. There's not a lot of time in between that.
I like that muscle memory.
It's a memory. There's neuronal networks that have been generated for that muscle memory to occur. And then if we were learning how to drive or learning something new, we have more beta waves active in our brain. And so that's the system that we're measuring. And we want to see, well, is that normal? Is it at a normal range? Are there certain areas that are too high and certain areas that are too low? And this, neural feedback has been around since, really almost 100 years, but little iterations where it would pop up and kind of go away. But since the 60s, definitely a lot of research has been done on it. And there are certain patterns that we see if someone is anxious, or other patterns that we see if they lack focus or have trouble paying attention, or if they are worriers, or if they have a lot of brain fog. So there's just tons of, oftentimes, you know, when they have certain brainwave patterns, we see these symptoms. And so it's really helpful when, like for someone with Lyme, I think it can be helpful in two areas. One is after we've gone through all the detox, but we're better, but the brain fog hasn't fully lifted yet. It's almost like we've kind of gutted the house, so to speak, and now we need to put it back together again. We've done all the detox, but there's some things that need support. So after Lyme is oftentimes when I recommend it. For oftentimes they don't need it, right? You do the Lyme protocols and it goes away. But if it doesn't, then it can be helpful to see what's going on in the brain. And then I have a subset of people who, and it took me a while to figure this out, but the people who are highly sensitive oftentimes have a history of trauma and their nervous systems are dysregulated and they need some support. So I believe they also need to work with a therapist to help heal that trauma. And my preference is EMDR or brain spotting. And so it's not to replace that, but it can help the nervous system rebalance so that they can begin to heal. So when someone's stuck in fight or flight, that keeps their cortisol, their adrenal hormones active, which can suppress the immune system, which can make it really hard to heal. So I think it can be helpful in that scenario too. It's not my first choice, but when I start seeing if someone feels like we make a little progress and then we stop and we make a little progress and we stop, that's another tool in the toolbox to see if that can help.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great tip right there. Cause I mean, when we go through Lyme, I think all of our nervous systems are just out of whack, right? It just mm-hmm. throws everything off. But, and I've said all along that if we have any type of emotional trauma or block trauma from our childhood or, you know, even our adult prior to being sick, it really is trauma that is inhibiting you from, one, either getting fully well, or two, staying fully well. And you need to unblock that trauma. You have to address it. And that's kind of, you know, there's so many things that fall under this Lyme umbrella, right? You know, and mm-hmm. that's just one of them. And oftentimes people will say, I had a great childhood. I didn't have any problems. You know, my parents are still married. Like, you know, they haven't really gone through anything. And what I like to say is that it could be something that you don't even know. You know, maybe your mother had a really hard labor with you. Maybe, you know, it put stress on your body when you were in utero. Just so many things that can cause that. So that's really good to know. So if people are kind of making progress and then halt or take steps backwards, that could be a sign of your nervous system.
I would say, in
not always, right? Because nothing is all the same.
Yes. And you said back to me exactly what I said. And when I'm hearing it, I wanted to add a little bit more to flesh it out. There's a constitution, like people, when they feel beaten down, right? When they're just like, I can't do this anymore. Or like some people come in and they're just like, I tried this. You know, what you got? And then there's some that come in and they're just like, I have Lyme and I'm exhausted. And, you know, they feel underneath it. They feel beaten by it. There's just they're exhausted. But usually I just ask if they have a history of trauma. I don't think I'm doing a very good job of explaining it, but there's a way of being that 99% of the time when I ask, they will say yes really fast. There's not, I have to think about it. There's not, well, does this time count? It's like, for sure I have it.
They know. Okay.
They know. Yeah. And so I would like to clarify what I said and just say if there's a history of trauma.
Okay. Gotcha. And if I put words in your mouth, I apologize.
You did not. You actually said exactly what I said. And I realized I didn't flesh it out very well. So thank you for that opportunity.
Absolutely. Okay. So yeah, so we get this part that's really, really good. And then I think I was going to say, what was the next step that we were going to talk about, right? Like what is it? We know what it is. You laid out all the kind of platforms, which was interesting because I didn't even know about a lot of those. And then talked about why we need it.
Yeah. I feel like anyone would benefit from it. I feel like it helps us be a best version of ourselves, or at least a better version of ourselves, because we all have a little bit of, well, many people, I should say, I've seen people who don't, but if there's any sense of worry or repetitive thinking or low mood or poor focus, it can be really helpful. So
it could be, yeah, because there's a lot of, I won't mention names because I don't know who's listening, but I know that there are people in my family that are big worriers, right? Like that, we call them the worry wart. And you know, oftentimes these things are kind of out of our control, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we don't want to address them because we don't want to think something's wrong with me. It's yes. not you. I mean, our body is what it is, right? Our brain yes. is what it is. Now, granted, you need to fuel it properly, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of things that we can't control, and we do need to reach out for help for different things like this. And I wonder, you know, people that are very OCD, right? Mm-hmm. Or have yes. a lot of anxiety, I would think that those people could also benefit from something like this.
Absolutely. I see. That's mostly what I see.
Okay.
And ADD and focus.
So is brain mapping and neurofeedback, is it the same thing? Are they two yeah. separate things?
They are two separate things. So okay. what we just went over was the brain map.
Brain mapping, and okay.
neurofeedback is what we do about it. So.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I love to learn. Yes. Okay.
So we retrain the brain, basically. With the brain map, we see what's going on. So there's several different patterns that can show up when someone is a worry wart or can be anxious. And so we get to see what their pattern is. And then we would set the sensors up over the location that shows up most out of balance on the brain map. And so we're measuring, we put the sensors in a location and we're measuring the electricity that's coming off of the brain. And we have that hooked up to the computer that has basically an algorithm. And it says anytime the brain waves move in the direction that we want, they're watching a movie, as a reward, the movie will play. And anytime the brain waves move in a direction, you know, away from what we want, the movie goes dark and the brain says, hey, I want to see what's going on. And the brain waves will move in the direction that we want. So we're capturing behavior. It's slow, right? It's not, doesn't happen overnight. Although I have people,
it's not that instant gratification that the world that we live in.
No, I wish there were, it takes time, but most people feel like it's worth it. I've done hundreds of cases, and I have about 9 people who feel like it wasn't worth their time, energy, or money. So it doesn't work for everyone, but if I've done 500, that's still 10 out of 500 is a pretty low rate of, and you know, people not feeling like it was worth it. But most people feel like it was worth their time, energy, and money when they do it. Okay. And I think that was the last question that you asked.
Yeah, but just right before you do that, you know, this is so interesting. One, I love this podcast for so many reasons, but one of them is I get to learn all these new things, and you just jogged something in my memory. And so after my initial treatment at the clinic that I went to for the first 3 years, the town I lived in burned to the ground. And so I lost my home. Mm-hmm. And with that, I lost so much documentation from my journey, my doctor's appointments, all the stuff, right? And so this clinic that I went to, it's very holistic. And there's a lot of things I'm like, I don't know exactly what was in it because I don't have my records anymore. But I remember that I think I did this. And the reason I think that is because they were doing some tests, and then they put this like a shower cap thing. And they had all these electrodes. Yeah. Is that it?
Yes, that's it.
Oh my gosh, I did that.
And
I saw this picture, and I was so sick and didn't even know my own name, right? Like, let alone what were they doing to me? Yeah. But I just ran across this picture the other day, and I was like, I wonder what that was. So that was the brain mapping and neurofeedback.
Yeah, brain map.
Probably. Well, apparently I had it done and I'm well, so.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Wow. Okay. That is so interesting. The things that we pop up from a conversation. Okay. So, can you talk about, is this something that you can break out into pricing, or is this all a package, or people can just come to your clinic and just have this done specifically?
They can come to the clinic and have this done specifically. And it is a package. Like, you can't just do one, right? There's just no point in doing one. And so you do a brain map, and that is either $450 for a 12 channel or an $800 for a 19 channel. And the difference is the severity of the issue. So sometimes when people are coming just for focus, and like they're bringing a child for attention issues, a 12 channel will probably be fine. If it's a complex case, we're doing a 19 channel. And then the sessions themselves, when they're done, they range between 100 and 120 a session. And it takes 30 to 60 sessions to get the brain to where we want it to be. So it's an investment for sure. What I love about neurofeedback is it's typically when you're done, you're done. Unless there's a trauma, unless there's some big, big thing that happens to the brain, you don't have to redo it. We've created the new neuronal network. So it's good to go. I have recently heard of some neurofeedback providers doing tune-ups, and I'm exploring that, but I've told people from day one, if you feel like your symptoms come back, call me. I need to know. But what I was taught was when we're done, we're done. And so no one's ever, I had one person call, and she'd gone through puberty. Like it was the mom of a daughter who was like, you know, she's got a new life circumstance, and I think we need a few more sessions, but that, I guess she was going to college, but that's it. So, that was the cost.
So if we can keep the trauma away, it's kind of a one and done deal, not a one and done, but the sessions, right?
Yeah.
Once we're done, we're done. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it can be done remotely. Part of it, the brain map has to be done in person, and that I have machines that I rent out. So people can come and do the brain map and then get trained on it. So they'd be here for a few days, and then they take the device home and do the neurofeedback on themselves. I train them how to do that.
Oh, really? Okay. So for people that are out of state or out of the area, that's really good to know, because it's hard to, oftentimes we have to travel around to, you know, different doctors, and you can't just go in for a minute visit, you know, like it's a lot and to travel and lodge and stay and to do this. So mm-hmm. that's a fantastic idea. I'm glad that you're offering that.
Yeah, me too. COVID helped with that.
There were some pros to COVID, right? Yeah. We all realized that we don't have to show up in person for that meeting.
Yes.
Wow.
It was around, but I just was in my set my ways, so to speak. And I was like, I'll let someone else do that. But then when I realized that I wasn't going to be able to continue care with the people I'd started, then I got, it's like, all right, I got to figure this out.
Yeah, got it. We got to come in with the times, right? The times are constantly changing. We have to learn how to pivot with them.
Yes.
So, wow. Okay. So that is also fascinating. And I do, I think it's an important piece to this healing journey, or it can be for sure. And one kind of final thing I want to touch on a little bit, because we did talk about a little bit earlier, is these highly sensitive people. You mentioned earlier that, you know, a lot of it is we really got to get these detox pathways, right, in our organ functionality, kind of all boost all of that up. Can you talk any more about that? Or even if it's just give some hope to those listeners that are extremely sensitive, because I can't tell you how many people I've talked to and they're like, no, I can't do that. No, I can't do that. No, I can't do that. And it's almost like, okay, can you not do it because physically your body is going to shut down, right? And we feel like we're going to die. Or is it, that was really hard and that Herx was a nightmare? How do you know the difference, right? Because we sometimes have to push ourselves. We know this, right? The journey is not easy. Take a few steps forward, a few steps back. But you know, the old saying, no pain, no gain, right? But I also know that we don't need to hurt so bad that we're so miserable. I know that we can back off on treatments, but how does one determine, and you know, this is probably a loaded question and maybe not even a question that can be answered by anyone, but how does somebody know if, am I just too sensitive, or do I just need to suck it up and think, okay, this is kind of the brutality of this journey?
I think in one sense, I don't know, right? The I don't know, but the way that there's a few things that I think I know. And okay. What I mean by that is there's a, like I mentioned earlier about a way of being, there's like when I've seen enough people with a certain type of demeanor, I start seeing patterns. And so there's, if someone is highly, often I will ask them, are they highly sensitive? And every once in a while they'll say, what do you mean? And then like the answer is probably no, but almost everyone who feels like they're highly sensitive will say yes. Mm-hmm. If they mention that they had a negative reaction to a medication that they tried before, or multiple medications, if they come in with a ton of sensitivities, you know, food sensitivities, if they have lived in a moldy environment, sometimes that can trigger mast cell, which I'm not an expert in mast cell. I was addressing highly sensitive people before any of these terms came out, yeah. Right? But I was having to navigate it without the knowledge. And I do have some knowledge, but I'm not a mast cell expert by any means, but I have enough to be able to help. I know what to avoid and how to help people navigate. So if they've been in a moldy environment, they rate all their symptoms as extreme, right? There's a high probability of sensitivity. And even in any of all of those cases, I'm going to start someone out really slow. And what I do is I say, we're going to start one product at a time at a quarter of a dose, and you go up a quarter of a dose each day for 4 days, and then you can add the next product. If someone is in an extreme situation where they already come in and say, I can do one drop, then we're obviously going to take it way slower than that. And I just put the drop on their wrist. Just their wrist. We don't even take it internally. Because
really,
homeopathics for sure can be impactful.
Okay.
But there's something to be said about, because if we have reacted so strongly for so many times and we've wasted so much money on supplements that we can't tolerate, which I've done a lot, then it's hard to want to experiment. It's hard to want to just keep doing it when you know you're going to feel like poop and you have to work the next day.
And that's why they give up. That's why. Yes. Yeah.
So moving from, if we can tolerate one drop on the wrist, that's a win, right? We didn't react.
Right.
So then if we move, we have a win under our belt. So then we move to the next thing where we maybe put one drop on our lip and we don't react. That's another win. And then we try to put one drop in some water and drink that, just a little bit of it. That's a win. And then the next day we, well, actually I'll have them wait a week or two before they try another one. These are for the extreme cases.
Right.
So I had someone with mast cell who was having anaphylaxis almost every day. And her doctor, she was seeing a doctor, a specialist for that. And she was on all these like hardcore medications and he wanted to get her off of them. And he wanted her to do quercetin, but she'd had an extreme reaction to quercetin. So I said, open up the capsule of quercetin, lick your finger and dip it in and lick it again. And we're just going to do that and have all your medications around, do it at a time where if you need to, if, you know, if you're going to have anaphylaxis, you can get somewhere to help you out if you need it. But he, I mean, her doctor was telling her to take like three capsules or something, but she was just scared to death to do it. So we did it that way. And she got up to the recommended dose of whatever it was her doctor wanted her to do. And she ultimately got off the medications. And he was like, this is the most unscientific, crazy thing. I didn't talk to him. This is her reporting back to me. But I'm so glad you did it. Like, I never would have thought to do that. But she was able to onboard it very slowly. It took her, I think, 4 months to get up to even a capsule.
See, but when there's a will, there's a way. And I think sometimes even if we haven't tried something specific, right, before, it would be the first time. And so we may or may not react to it. I think so much of it is a lot of the PTSD that we've gained over this journey, right? And it really puts that fear in us. And we're in that fear, right? It even bumps up our fight and flight mode, right? Like it just revs everything up. And so it's okay. Slow and steady can win the race too. And I like how you said just the simplest of things, right? Like just put your little finger on it. Yes, those are great tips. And if that's all we can do, that's all we can do. We can only do what we can handle, whether it is simply because your body is very sensitive or whether it's mostly in your head and you don't think your body can handle it, whatever it may be, there's always a way. If there's a will to get better, there's a way to get better.
Yes.
And also what you said, if you can survive it being on your wrist, that's a win. So oftentimes people forget to celebrate the wins.
Yes.
Forget to celebrate even the smallest of wins. And I think it's for a couple of reasons. One, it seems so small and minute, right? Like, oh, whoop-de-doo, you know, I went to the bathroom on my own today. Like, I don't know. But, and then oftentimes it's because we are hyper-focused on the really big things that are still wrong, right? And that is where journaling can be a game changer, because if we're going through all this trouble, all this time, all this money, and we're not seeing changes, I mean, who in their right mind wouldn't be defeated? You know what I mean? And if we can document these things, if we can track our symptoms and how we're feeling, maybe you have a whole lot of wins, you just didn't know it. But we need those wins. We need to recognize them. We need to celebrate them, because that's what's going to keep you going. And that's what's going to get you to the finish line.
Yes. I love everything you said. And we do a lot of celebrating here. I do happy dances with people when they're feeling better, any sort of win. And part of it is when we celebrate something, it causes our brain chemistry to think, oh, wait, that's important. know, the bigger the emotion, the bigger the importance, and we'll actually myelinate our nerve pathways. So it's like causing our brain to remember that. Like if you think about your childhood, most people remember the big things, happy things or not happy things, but we don't remember the mundane things. Mm-hmm. It's the things that had the biggest emotion around it. And so by celebrating, I also feel like it's telling our brain we want more of that. I don't know if that's true or not, but in my head, that's what I think is happening. And celebrating, it feels silly and like we're goofy. And I was not the cheerleader in high school, but I'm doing the dances and screaming. And I think it's really important to celebrate. And we have progress trackers that people fill out every time. So just for that reason, so we can say, wow, last time brain fog was a 10 and today it's a 9. Yay. I know it's a tiny little thing and I know it's a self-report and those aren't really that reliable, but I'm going to put it in the win category anyway, and let's go with it. And people get into the spirit of it and they realize like, oh yeah, like what's the harm in celebrating? And the other thing I was going to add on to when you were talking about the fear, I feel like sometimes that is protection, right? Like there's that part of ourselves that is trying to protect us from another thing that doesn't work or another thing that could make us feel better. And it's not, we don't have control over that part, that it's a part. And it sometimes we can have opposing parts where one part wants us to get better, but one part is so busy protecting us that it can't really let us get better. And I'm not, again, a therapist, but I refer out to a lot of therapists for that reason. So if I see that pattern, then there's a system called internal family systems that looks at the parts and helps people, helps them understand them and get them kind of reconciled in a way, not dismissed, honored. And through the process, those parts get another job. But I think there's a lot of resources. And to go back to my parts of getting well, the other thing I did was EMDR, because I had a lot of trauma. And I also did energy healing. The chiropractor that I met with the day that said when I told him I had Lyme, he was an energy healer. And I thought that it wasn't by coincidence that I was meeting him the day that I got Lyme. That I knew when I got diagnosed with Lyme. And so I did all of those things together. And I do feel like that was another piece of why I moved so quickly, because I was in fight or flight and had been in fight or flight for over 40 years at that point. And I needed to address those things. And fortunately I had the resources that I knew who to go to for it. So
And I love all of that. And yes, whether is it a scientific thing? I don't know. If we get excited about something, is it really working in the, hey, I'm all in for believing that it is, right?
Me too.
I can guarantee you it's not hurting it, right? It's not damaging your brain. That I can promise you. So it is so important. Just like you said, Anna, we've got to celebrate all the wins. There's not much along this journey we get to celebrate or even smile over, right? So when something small happens, you take it and you celebrate. Yes. And that is going to be the power that's going to put you back in power of your own health. I truly believe it.
Me too. Because you get to move from victory to victory that way, right? There's little dips in the middle that makes the journey a lot better.
It sure does. Oh my gosh, Anna, this has been... what a fabulous chat we just had. You shed some light on me. You made me remember what I did during my treatment. Many great tips for the listeners out there and just a lot of really, really good information. So I truly thank you for your time sharing. I thank you for sharing your, your personal journey. And I appreciate what you're doing there, because I think that we can become so empathetic with people within our community, right? And so now here you are, you are part of that village, you are part of that community, and you're able to get back in the capacity that you do. So I appreciate you. We need more people like you out there making us better. So thank you.
Thank you. It's been a privilege, Tanya. Thank you so much for what you're doing. for the community. And I just appreciate your big heart so much and your generosity. It's just extraordinary what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I sure hope you listeners enjoyed that episode. Whether it's hope you needed, a little inspiration today, or just maybe some validation that what you're feeling, what you're going through is real. Maybe you needed tips on how to treat at home, ideas, thoughts, detoxing, whatever it is. I truly just hope it's what you got out of today's episode. That is my only hope, is just to give back to this community in any way possible. So go to the about of this podcast, scroll down to the bottom and find that donation link. Go ahead and click on there, and anything that you'd like to donate or offer is all just going to go to help to pay towards the studio cost.